I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Emily Erstad. She is the author of It's Not That Deep. Emily explores the nuanced intersections of emotion, identity, growth, leadership, and human connection. With a master's degree in speech language pathology from the University of Illinois and a bachelor's degree from Northern Illinois University, Emily brings both clinical insight and human-centric leadership to her work. Emily and I, we've chatted like a bunch without ever hitting record. It's a shame we didn't hit record before, but we've covered so much ground. If you're a leader, we're going to be focusing heavily on emotional intelligence today. And, you know, some leaders instinctively get it. I think you should listen to Emily. Even if you feel like you're really good at emotional intelligence, I think you're going to discover some really cool things in this discussion. So, Emily, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So let's jump to like the end.
Sure.
And just quickly, why should people care about emotional intelligence?
Well, we're human and we all have emotion, right? I mean, I think it's just this, I think emotional intelligence is a discussion that's happening all the time, right? We talk about nonstop. It can be a very advantageous tool though for professional growth, for relationship building, for personal growth. And I think we talk about emotional intelligence till we're blue in the face, but we don't talk about what to do with it. And so I felt like bringing my perspective was offering an opportunity to level up and maybe provide yourself some healing while also elevating other leaders.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. And I think, no, and I just think, yeah, the art of leadership is not what you can do, but what you can get other people to do. And I believe emotional intelligence is one of the keys that unlocks that magic.
100%. And I think it's interesting. Leadership development never stops, right? Like they always say, if you're not growing, you're dying. And I think that's so true, right? And so I'm glad that we're having this discussion about emotional intelligence. It seems very trendy right now, as some would say, but I think there's so much more to it than just its existence. And, you know, whether you want to say making, you know, leadership is convincing people to follow you at the end of the day. It's borderline manipulative, right? Which sounds kind of crazy to say out loud, but it's true. Like you're convincing people that this is a good idea. But how can you do that? Have confidence in what you're doing and know that you're doing what's best for everyone included. And go home and not feel like you speak one thing and do another. I think that's really what it's about.
Yeah. I like that. Well, let's kind of wind this back. Let's kind of go upon the thing. You know, so one of the things, I mean, we've probably talked, what, a couple of hours at this point, you know, combined.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. We just chatted. We know everything about each other at this point, but in a good way. And it's just been awesome. Yeah.
It's been awesome. And I was telling you, you know, for those that don't know, you know, so when, you know, I was in a rehab hospital, I had, you know, a physical therapist, an occupational therapist, and I had a speech therapist. I think speech therapy, it's like one of the most misleading terms in healthcare. You would assume, hey, this is going to help me. This is somebody that's going to help me speak again. But it's so much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always say that. That's my tagline. You know, I'm a speech therapist, but I know you talk just fine, right? It's not about how you talk, right? And then if they don't talk well, then it's obviously I don't have to kind of preface that, right? But it's a real gift in the sense that we get to partner with people in their harshest times of their life and give them back their life, right? We get to partner with them. And I think that was also one of those pivotal lessons. And I think as a therapist, you partner, you don't assume responsibility. right? You take that patient as far as they'll let you take them. And so that was where I learned a lot about my leadership, but also a lot about who I wanted to be as a person. And so it's a great opportunity, and I loved it for what it was. It just wasn't my forever job, you know, but it's something I'll always fall back on.
Okay. And for those that don't know, what are all the things a speech therapist is responsible for?
Sure. So speech, obviously, language, cognition, comprehension, writing, reading, swallowing, voice, you know, AAC devices, anything communication, anything cognitively processing, and anything that would help you communicate with others. And then if you can't eat, we're also there too.
Yeah.
It's a big hodgepodge.
Well, I think I told you the first encounter I remember, and probably wasn't the first, but one of the first encounters I had with a speech therapist was they were doing a swallow test. And at this point, I hadn't eaten anything through my mouth for, you know, a month and a half or more. And they gave me some pudding. And I was like, oh, let me have the rest of it. And of course, I'm, you know, and they're like, well, it's full of barium. You don't want that.
Yeah, it's cool because we get to be there for a lot of firsts, right? And have fun. But we also are the first one to tell you no. That's not always fun. Nope, you can't have that. But if you give me 5 minutes, you know. So, yeah, it's the craziest job. You know, I thought initially I was going to be a nurse, and then I stumbled into speech therapy. But you know, now that I've kind of grown through my career and seeing how many lessons I learned through it, I totally see why I was meant to be there in that season of my life.
Well, and one of the challenges that I faced, and I think this will tie into where we're going, you know, so when I first woke up from my coma, I believed some pretty crazy things about the world. And one of the things you told me in the hour or two, a couple hours that we've already talked, was you said there should have been a speech therapist there to kind of let me know that that was normal. And I'm sitting there having to figure out what's real and what's not with around people that are confused why I'm saying weird things.
Yeah, that was kind of a surreal moment for me too, because I realized that's who I was for those patients. And I was telling you, it's so rare that I get to talk to someone that experienced what you did this far on in life, right? And seeing the impact that you got to have, but also what we could have and should have done for you, right? And so there's obviously a lot of movement that should happen in speech therapy of where we're placed. Maybe that's another calling in my life. But having that understanding that you should have had then has been one of those things that's really shaped how I approach patients, people, workers, relationships in my life, because everybody wants to feel seen in those really difficult moments.
Well, and I would imagine it's a tough job of persuasion. I mean, so
Oh, yeah.
I refer to the dumbest argument I ever had with my wife. You know, I told her, I said, hey, I want to go home. And she's like, you can't walk. I'm like, I can too. And we're sitting there arguing back and forth, and literally I can't lift my arms or legs.
Sure.
I'm actually tethered by a big tube in my neck to a machine next to the bed.
Yeah.
And she can't convince me that I can't walk because I absolutely believe I can walk because I had been in my dreams.
Sure.
So you're in that situation. You're trying, I mean, I would hope anybody listening could relate to, hey, I had this dumbest argument with somebody. They were doing something wrong. I couldn't convince them they were wrong.
Right.
How would you convince people?
I don't convince them. I don't. Like I acknowledge that. I acknowledge, like, yeah, you want to go home, and I would love for you to go home. Like, you deserve to go home. You've been here forever. I think it's accompanying a hard truth with the facts of where we're at. It's this weird combination of really relating to that person and hearing them, and also bringing those hard truths in of like, I know you want to go home. I want you to go home. But this is where we're at. Can you move your legs? Can you move your arms? No, I can't. So how are we going to get you there? And I think it's always walking them through that reasoning with me of, this isn't my idea. This is your idea, but this is not forever, right? And we're together. We're going to get you there. As far as you want to go, we'll get there. And that's typically the conversation I have with my patients is, this is us together. We're building trust. We're building a team together to get you where you want to go.
Well, I think in terms of leading people, everybody wants to go somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. Usually home. Hate to come full circle, but yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. It's not that different, is it?
No. And that's the thing that I think's, you know, and what happens so many times is, and I see this, I used to do it more. I still do it, but I try not to. is like, well, here, let me lay out the facts for you. And here are all the facts, you know, the logical reasons why what you're believing is all screwed up. And it's never persuasive.
No, and you, but to do that, you have to understand where they're coming from. If they don't understand where you're coming from, if you're dreaming this and you feel like that's real to you, we have to acknowledge that. Like, that's the emotional intelligence of it, right? Like, I have to get in the boat with you and say, gosh, you're right. If I was dreaming that, I'd feel that way too. And before this, you could do that. Like, if we're not acknowledging those facts, we're not meeting you where you're at. We're just puking information at you that you don't want to hear. And then you're just going to tell them to go away. I always tell my patients, nobody wants their intelligence questioned. So let me tell you this. I think you're an intelligent person. My job is to pick you apart to make you better. So can you trust me to do that? Usually it takes a bit of time, but I've been well-versed working with veterans for some time. Usually humor gets me very far too. If you're like, that's another strategy. A horribly placed joke does a good thing.
Well, I would say that probably in many ways, you know, working with veterans, I wonder if it's easier just because of the prep, you know, the mental and physical prep that they have going, or and primarily the mental prep that they come from an environment where people present hard truths.
Can be their greatest strength and their greatest weakness, right?
Well, that's interesting. The greatest weakness?
Yeah, sometimes it's like they can't let you in because of that, you know, because everything's so hard. So they're just going to buckle down and do it themselves. And I'm like, that's great, but you need me. And so it's convincing them to have that trust in me. You know, people that are built to be self-sufficient and ask me how I know, don't really rely on people's well, right? So it's like, how do I convince you to trust this person you don't know in the hardest time of your life that I'm bought in and I'm going to do this with you, right?
Yeah.
It's not fun. Sometimes it's really great. I just recently stepped out of home health as a speech therapist, just recently, like last week. And it was a lot more emotional than I realized because I took pride in the relationships I built with. Like, I gave myself up for these patients. You know what I mean? Like, I was giving a part of myself to these people because I knew it was for the greater good. It's a different season of life I'm moving into, and I'm thankful for the opportunity. But it's just as much a journey for me learning about myself and how to relate to you as is for the person going through it.
I mean, as I'm listening to this, you know, bringing patients out of comas and back to normal life, I mean, the skills are not that different from leading people. I mean, if you're leading strong-willed people, which are your future leaders, these are the people you want to promote up through your organization.
Yeah, you want that grit. That's who you want.
But they can be hard to corral.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to school to be a therapist to not manage people, to then walk into managing a hospice, which is probably the hardest thing I've ever done, but is also the most satisfying thing I've ever done. But yeah, it's a lot of getting people to buy in and having transparent and vulnerable conversation that people understand the direction you're going. If people don't know where you're going, they're not going to follow you, or they shouldn't. I wouldn't. You know, you don't want to follow, like lead them off a cliff. That's not doing anybody any favors. But I think being a radically strong leader, especially at the chaos of the world that we exist in, on top of the chaos that hospice naturally brings, that consistent, authentic leadership is essential. And it really has to start with a pretty solid understanding of who you are and who you want to be. And I'd like to think I have that figured out, but it changes because we change with age. Humans change, right? The only thing constant is change.
Yeah. You know, something just hit me as you were talking. And, you know, if I look at my journey out of the hospital, it was, I knew life would get better if I did the work and if I kept my mind in the right place. But in hospice, you're dealing with people where life is only going to get worse. And you have to lead them through managing expectations. And again, if I bring that back to the workplace, you have some people whose aspirations are beyond their abilities. You know, they want to rise to a position that's just not in them. And so you have to be able to deliver bad news in a way where they still trust you and follow you. How do you do that in the hospice situation?
It's a lot of chaos management. It's a lot of consistency. It's a team effort. It's timing of conversation. It's the same approach I take with my patients. You're getting in the boat with them and you're partnering with them for something that's life-changing, right? It's still life-changing. And when you meet these people, they've never died before. You know, we witness people die 3, 4, 5 deaths a week, and we have a system that we follow. As a leader, I have a consistent system. It's a very surreal experience to make death a business. I can tell you that much, you know, because I have to kind of remove myself. And that's where my time as a therapist wasn't helping me, because I had to decontextualize to do what I needed to do to be the leader that my team needed them to be. So if you're asking me what I do, consistency over time with strong boundaries, even when they hate me, right? Because this is not your place, and this is why we're doing what we're doing. That transparency makes hard conversations 10 times easier. For my nurses, they are such compassionate, loving people. I mean, I admire them so much. I could not do what they do. Wonderful people. They're doing it for the families. They're doing it. There's a spiritual connection to this, whether you want to, you know, whether it is God, the universe, whatever, whoever you believe in. There is a surrealness to partnering with someone as they go through a hard time. It's quality over quantity, you know, and there is an acceptance that comes towards the end of life that just surpasses anything I could explain to you. And I've gotten to experience it firsthand, and it's the most grounding, beautiful thing, but you wouldn't believe it unless you lived it, you know? It's the funny thing about death.
Well, you know, it's funny. It triggered another memory for me. You ever see those hover round commercials where somebody's in that little scooter and they're like, I can go to the Grand Canyon. I had told my wife for years, I said, you ever put me in one of those scooters, we are going to the Grand Canyon. I'm driving over the edge. And so when I'm in the hospital and she's looking at me and the doctors told her, we're not sure how much of Craig's coming back, sure, you know, mentally or physically.
Sure.
And she was terrified. She remembered me saying, you put me in one of those scooters, I'm going to the Grand Canyon, I'm going over the edge. And it scared her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's interesting, because hospice is just as much there for the family as it is. Once again, that whole picture and that emotional intelligence of understanding we're there for the patient, but we're there for the whole picture, you know? And I think what I've been saying a lot lately is that fear, when you start to feel fear, because, you know, it's a simple equation. You work hard, play hard, life works out. When fear creeps in, that's when you should start to really question where you're at. Because if you're leading out of fear, look out. And I think that's something I've been watching lately too. Because when I am working hard, and I like to keep myself busy to avoid fear, to be honest, that's my solution. It's not a great solution and it burns me out. But when you find yourself leading out of fear, having those fearful decisions, look to someone else, look to a constant, and center yourself, because you're doing the right things. Don't let that guilt sneak in, which it will. And that's what I think gets hard about hospice. And I think that's one of my purposes in life, is to take the fear out of hospice, right? Because we're so scared to talk about hospice, we're negating its value. And that's honestly the struggle of running a business in hospice. That is, if you ask any executive director, that's what they'll tell you. It's that people are so scared of the inevitable. And we're not changing the diagnosis or the prognosis or any of it. We're just partnering.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Full circle. Hey, that was good.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your book. Your book's titled It's Not That Deep. So what's the book about?
Yeah, so it's a very cathartic, poetic approach to professional and personal development. I share a lot about myself and my journey, probably not as deeply as I should have now that I read it again, but enough that I was comfortable with at the time that helped develop some of these hard emotional intelligence skills that I have today. It's funny because I'm rereading it a year later and there's a lot of truth to it still, but I'm like, I should have changed this or I should have done that. And I'm like, Emily, you did the best you could with what you have, and you're literally negating everything you're telling everybody in this book, right? But it talks about things as like perfectionism diminishing you, and timing is everything, and knowing that sometimes the timing that comes along is the difference, right? And it's just knowing that. It's nothing you can do or change. But the oxymoron of the title is, I'm a very deep person. So for me to say it's not that deep is hilarious, because it is, right? We all know how deep emotions are. And that's why we talk about them so much, because we don't understand them. And I'm not saying that this book is going to help you understand them. It may not. I think what it does is offers perspective, and it offers strategies for you to figure it out for yourself. And I think there's a lot of value in gathering perspectives, not allowing it to change who you are at your core, but allowing it to build your foundation of who you want to be as a person. And that's the connection I want to build with this book. So it's not just emotional intelligence, you know, but it is at the end of the day.
When you told me something about building a community or building communities, What does that look like?
Still figuring that out. You know, I've been very blessed in the previous leadership positions I've taken, where I've built strong teams that surpass me when I leave, and I've been called to new situations and left teams I've loved to build teams again. And that's definitely, like, I'm an equalizer, I'm a builder, right? And I love doing that. And I have a creative visionary spirit that I think I need to feed. So what does that community look like long term? I think I have to connect with more people to figure out what the need is. I don't want to build something that people don't need. Right now, I am blogging and newslettering and connecting with indie authors and people that have insight that they want to share. I'm looking for networking opportunities. I want people to read this and tell me, hey, this is what my perspective of this, or this is what related to me. You know, my dream would be to create retreats and places where people feel like they're coming home and finding themselves and connecting and building something greater than me, right? Like a momentum that is so bold. But right now, that just means I'm publishing books and finding my community and who I want to connect with. So I did publish, it's not that deep self-published, but I'm revisiting it to republish it, hopefully with a publisher, because I'm manifesting that for myself right now. And then because it is that deep, I wrote another book called In Too Deep that's sitting next to me as a manuscript that I want to publish and continue writing and finding out what this story looks like, because I feel like I don't want to diminish myself with expectation. I want this to come organically and create it custom to who I connect with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's really interesting. I mean, the more I think about it from the road you've been on, as a speech therapist, and just all the leadership elements that come with that enable you that apply directly to business. It's really fascinating. Let me ask you this. So you're in Arizona right now, but you're not from Arizona.
No, I'm from the Midwest. Went to school in Illinois, like you said, and I was in Indiana, and COVID hit and everything shut down. My outpatient that I was building shut down, what I was creating, once again, creating in the wrong place. Maybe not the wrong place, but the wrong time, right? And moved across the country because I needed money and I was broke as a joke to Montana. And I was going through a really hard season of my life. I had broken off a really toxic engagement, like bad stuff that, like, lost everything, my money, my house, everything, my relationships. Got to Montana and I thought to myself, it's better to cry in Yellowstone than it is in a cornfield. So I'll just go do this in Montana. And that's when I started writing a blog called Leaving Me Speechless, if you're catching my drift. And then I left it in Montana. I just stopped and moved to Tucson, Arizona. Honestly, I picked a spot on a map with no freaking reasoning. I don't know why I ended up here. But when I got here, that's when my leadership journey truly began. And just leadership opportunity after leadership opportunity was falling in my lap. And it wasn't because I wasn't working hard. I was working hard, but it wasn't what I was looking for, but it's what I needed. And then that's when I kind of started to have this understanding that leadership isn't just something you go to work and leave at home or vice versa. It's a whole person journey. And I started to expedite my growth when I realized I can professionally and personally develop at the same time and accomplish all these crazy things that I never thought of. You know, I lived in the Midwest. I was a farm kid, rode horses. I never in my life did I think I'd be across the country running a hospice as a speech therapist. Like, this was not what I had planned, and it's not where my story ends.
Wow. Well, Emily, this has been amazing. One, where can people get the book? It's Not That Deep.
Yeah, it's on Amazon, so you can search It's Not That Deep, or you can just go to my website, eepublications.com. And my Instagram's there, my LinkedIn's there, everything you need, and a link to my book.
Oh, excellent. Well, that was my next question, is how can people get in contact with you?
Same place. I'm on Instagram more than I am anything else. I need to work on my presence on there, but you can direct message me there. My email's on my website. You can email me there, LinkedIn, anything. I'll be available.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Sure.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media, Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.